So I had some shailas that were not related to Pesach, and I decided to put them aside. Let's just talk about some of the more some of the stuff that comes up that's related to Pesach. I jotted down some of them, and obviously at the end I'm happy to take all questions and all things relevant. Just to mention, I mentioned Friday night. I'll mention it again because I didn't think it was Negeya. These are shailas that you don't think of, but I'll mention this, not related to Pesach, but it's related to what went on. There is a bracha that is said on an earthquake. I think at this point now everybody knows because they send all the gifs. The problem is they send the halachas, but without actually explaining it. There is a bracha. It's a Oysa Masa Bereshis. The problem is that you have to say it within 3 or 4 seconds. So it's, yeah, so you know, I mentioned Friday night, Mistama came out, nobody said the bracha the first time, because although I was aware of the bracha, the first thing you're asking is, was that an earthquake? Is that an earthquake? I thought the neighbor was doing construction too close. So there was an aftershock, and the aftershock you could say a bracha. But okay, that's a bracha, and again, it's too late, and it's not going to happen for another 20-something years. There's no bracha on a solar eclipse. Yes, I felt it very much. It was around 1:30, it was like 1:29. Yes, you feel it. No, you have to be aware of it. There is no bracha on an eclipse. Pashtus, the reason being, is because the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Chav Tes Amud Aleph, says that it's a bad sign. Either it's a bad sign to the whole world, it's a bad sign just for the Goyim, it's a bad sign, Bekitzer, so it's not something that you make a bracha on. I don't know. We don't have to deal with another 20-something years. I'll look forward to seeing everybody's status of their own versions of seeing the eclipse, but there's no bracha being said on it. Okay, run through some of the halachas that are negeya to Pesach that at least come to mind. First of all, now, today is the first day where there's a mitzvah. There was a mitzvah that started today, which you should do as soon as you can, and that is Birchas Ilanos, and that's to make a bracha on a fruit-bearing tree. Ideally, if you have two trees, that's even better. There is a tree across the street from Dr. Bennett on that corner. There's a house where they put up a nice sign. The mitzvah is to do it during the month of Nisan. Ideally, you do it before Pesach. Bidi'eved, you could do it even after Pesach. The truth is, bidi'eved, you can go even past Nisan, but there's really no excuse. You should take care of it right away. It's a very big mitzvah. The shiloh that I want to mention is Rav Avad Yosef has a tshuva in Yechav Adas, and that is, are you allowed to do it on Shabbos? Because Shabbos is when people have time, they're walking around, could you say it on Shabbos? So Rav Avadya Yosef goes through it, and he basically says he's not aware of a real problem. Now, there were some poskim who raised certain objections. Rav Chaim Palagi felt that it's a problem because he felt that maybe we're afraid that you'll pluck something off the tree, right? You're going too close. But Rav Avadya proves from other areas of halacha that that's not necessarily the biggest concern. There is a legitimate basis to say that al pi Kabbalah, for Kabbalistic reasons, better not to. So Rav Avad Yosef's conclusion is as follows. It is better not to do it on Shabbos. However, if the only time for you to do it is Shabbos, Me'ezatam, whatever the case is, if the only time for you to do it is Shabbos, then you may do it, but it is better not to do it on Shabbos. Okay. The Poskim say you could do it at night as well, it seems. I mean, if you could see it. If you could see it, you know, no. Not that I'm aware of. Yeah, you can see it. So if you could see it, then you can make a bracha. What I'm about to mention is a big heter. It could be it's a davar pashut, but Rebelsky, when I was younger, I would watch these, I would listen to Shirin from Rebelsky, and he felt very strongly that to do the bedika, bedikas chametz, is getting on all fours and checking, you know, kibshutai. Now, most people don't do that. So what's the heter of, what is Bedikas Chametz basically nowadays? So let me read you 3 lines from Rav Shlomo Zalman. This is an Alicha Shlomo. He says, Bizmanenu nowadays, Shemechabdin es Abayi is hetev. You know, like if you watch their videos, you can watch on YouTube of Rav Chaim Kanievsky doing Bedika, where they pick up the chair, and he looks. And the story goes, it's like a tzmimus dik of a tzaddik, that when someone was describing to Rav Chaim once the average house in America, size, His first question was, how do you do bedika? That was his first question. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says, this is bedika. Bizmanenu nowadays, shemechabdin es abayis heitev. Nowadays, you don't just start cleaning the night of bedikas chametz. You're cleaning for days and weeks before. Afal pi shechiv bedika b'kayma oimet. Although you still have to do bedikas chametz, what is bedikas chametz? Says Rav Shlomo Zalman. Ein bal abayis chayv lefashvesh b'shas ha-bedika b'chol mekayim. You don't have to, like, look through everything. This is bedikas chametz. yedaktik v'yivchayn heitiv in kvarniku kol makum upina mechametz. What you're doing is you are checking to make sure that you didn't miss a spot. Meaning, if let's say your wife has been cleaning the house, so what you're doing b'dikas chametz is you're going room to room, making sure that it was cleaned properly. If you see something like, oh, we missed that room, then you check it. But the ikar b'dika is to make sure that the cleaning had been done properly before. So you don't necessarily have to go to each crevice. If the cleaning lady came through, you're just going to make sure that she did a proper job. It's a much more holistic, broader type of b'dika nadays. That's what Shlomo Zalman says. And I think it's important because I think part of, you know, I'm not going to become that rabbi that talks about this, or Weinberger is very into the whole going away thing. I'm not into, but I think part of the theory that a lot of people have is the reason why people went away is because the whole Badika and all these halachas of Pesach became so overwhelming for people that they just like, I'm done, I want to just go to Florida. So if you could just properly do it in a way that doesn't make people as neurotic, I think that's important. And therefore, Badika's Chametz is just to make sure that it was cleaned properly before. You don't have to make yourself super crazy. You're just going from room to room checking. That's the proper form of Badika, according to Rosh Hashanah Zalman. Keep going. There's a shaila that comes up that I get every single time when we're starting the Mechiras Chametz on Sunday. That's what people will come by. So the question that I always get is when you fill out the forms. So Mechiras Chametz is important. I'm not going into it now, but it's important to do the Mechiras Chametz. Now, if people are going away, they'll generally sell their entire house, their entire apartment, their entire house. Now, it does say on the form, except for a certain area, if you'd like to not sell a certain area, that's a very nice thing. And the reason to do that is so that you could do a Bedikas Chametz with a bracha. Because then, if you, let's say you're selling your whole place, if you leave off a bedroom, so you do Bedikas Chametz in the bedroom. Now, it happens to be, if you're selling the whole place, but you're going to Orlando, you'll have to do Bedikas Chametz in Orlando with a bracha. So it's not as much of a problem. But the question basically is, do you have to do Bedikas Chametz on an area that you're going to sell? Now, the Mishnah Berurah brings down two opinions, and I'm always bothered by the same question. Now, the rationale behind it, you sort of can see both views. Like, if you're doing the Gemara, you could see both sides. On the one hand, it's being sold to a guy. Why do I have to do Bedika? It's not going to be mine on Pesach. On the other hand, the sale takes place at 11:30 a.m., right? It takes place 11:30 a.m. on Erev Pesach. That's before the Zman Isser. Bedikas Chametz is the night before. By the time you're doing Bedika, it's not sold yet. So right now, it's still yours. And that's why there's two opinions brought down by the Mishnah Berurah. I'm always asked the same question, which is, and I don't really have a good answer, and that is, if you hold that you have to do Bedika, what's the nature of the Bedika? I'm selling the whole house. The house is full of Cheerios. I have to do Bedika. I see it. So I guess you'd have to just allocate it to make sure it's in a specific area. But I will say this. Let me read. Shlomo Zalman Orbach writes that Nagu, this is also in Halicha Shlaima, Hamakam she'osed lahasker limker lenachri, the places that you plan on selling to a guy, haminig hu she'ein baikin, the minig is not to do bedika, ava bishamekach yelamachar, even though the sale will only take place the next day, the minig of Shlomo Zalman says is not to bedika if you're selling the whole apartment. I will say this, that's a good point. It's fine. That's a good point. Whenever we say selling the whole apartment, you're more selling the chametz within the apartment. Although, I will say this, the shtar that Rabbi Willig uses, he discusses in the shtar that's being sold to the guy, what about the fact that if you're renting an apartment, you don't have the rights to sell it, and he works it within the shtar. Also, by the way, just to mention, this just as an aside, when it comes to selling the chametz within or selling the items, this is also related to kalim. You do not, for the record, you do not have to sell kalim that are clean. Let's say you have a frying pan. That's a chametz frying pan. You don't have to sell that. Just don't use it. If the chametz is within the pan, you don't have to sell it. There's no chiyuv of tashbisu, of destroying, for the chametz that's in the pan. And on the contrary, so what some people used to do is they just sell everything. Now, the problem with selling the actual pan itself is that it creates potential issues of tefilas kalim, because now if you sold it to a guy and then he bought it back from the guy, you have to bring it to the mikveh, which no one's going to want to do. So what a lot of people say is you're not selling the pan, you're selling the chametz within the pan. To be fair about that, Rav Belsky was not the biggest fan, because Rav Belsky said, who sells flavor in a pan? And he felt that Ravelsky's viewpoint throughout all these mechiras is he wanted to make sure that it was as real as possible. So he actually felt it's better not to sell the pots, because either you're selling the pots themselves, which is legitimate, but then you're getting tefilas kalim, or you'll say you're selling the flavor in the pots, which he says is, who sells that? That's ridiculous. And therefore, Revelsky felt that it's better to just not sell it. You don't have to sell it, and that probably makes the most sense. Next one, this next halacha, I think I mentioned it last year. You won't, if you're not present, you won't know what I'm doing, but I'm happy to send a video. There is a YouTube video. If you type in YouTube, Revelsky leaning, it's the first video that comes up. It was posted on Matzav like 8 years ago. And that is, what is the proper form of Heseba? It's a subtle game changer. We know you're supposed to lean during the Seder. So a lot of people, and it's supposed to be comfortable. So what a lot of people do is they'll lean like this, and it's just not, it seems forced and it seems awkward. So a lot of people say, well, they used to like lie down. Understood. Revelsky said that in the video, they asked him about this. It was a Ask the Rabbi thing with him and Rabbi Reisman. And he was in Tar Vadas, and he's in the Beis Medrash. And they asked him, what is the proper form of a Seba? How many degree angle? That's what they said. Like, so Revelsky smiled, and he said he was always bothered by like how to do a Seba properly. And he said he was in a hotel for an Aguda convention, and part of the wallpaper had like images of Romans and hieroglyphic type images. And they were doing Heseba, because that's how you see it. And it was like this. It was just slight leaning on his left side. And he said, that's very comfortable. And he says that that's what Heseba is. So that's the proper way to do it. I don't know. You lean on your left side. You put the table in the crook of your arm at a 90-degree angle. It's just, I don't know. You get the security cameras. But I'm happy to pass along. You Google it. You'll see Revelsky. He explains it very perfectly. And it makes it very, very easy. Okay, let's go weiter. Now, huh? Oh, okay, so you should still lean if you can. I'm saying, but according to this, it's a very comfortable way to lean. If you turn the chair to the side and you put the crook of your elbow, it's very, very comfortable. So I'll mention the Shiloh. Now, this is a Shiloh that I've spoken about in the past. On Shabbos. No, all men. Afilu oni shav Yisrael. Even a poor person from Klal Yisrael has to lean. So the Gemara, there's a Shiloh that I've mentioned in the past on Shabbos, but it's Negeya on Yom Tov especially. And that is inviting someone who's going to potentially drive. Now, not to get too detailed, I don't want to get too detailed because I think we once gave a whole shiur on this, but very, very bekitzer to explain in a few minutes. What let's say on Shabbos, okay? You're going to invite someone to your house on Shabbos and they're going to drive. Now, what's the potential issue? They're driving. That's them. That's not an issue for you. The issue for you is lifnei iver lo sitin michshel. You're not allowed to cause someone to stumble. Now, the halacha is that not causing someone to stumble is an iser d'oraisa if it's betray avrei denara. Betray avrei denara means that it's only aser d'oraisa if they could only do the iser because of you. If they could do the iser without you, it is not biblically forbidden. I'll give you an example. If passing someone a piece of chazer, that's lifnei iver lo sitin michshel, you're causing them to stumble. Says the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, it's only a problem biblically if you're on two opposite sides of the river, so they cannot do the avera without you facilitating it. But if they could do the avera without you, pashtus only an issa d'rabbanon. Now the reason why that's significant is because once it's an issa d'rabbanon, then there's much more room to be lenient. You could start combining other heterim. There's a shita of the meshiv dover, the nitziv, that it's not a problem if you're not handing them the isser. There is more potential room to be lenient. So I'll say this, and there's a famous shita of Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach in Mincha Shlomo, Simon Lamed Hay, famously felt that if the alternative, that if let's say you have someone coming to your house, and the question was, you had someone coming to his house, and if he gives him food, he's not going to make a bracha. He says, but if I don't give him food, he's going to be anti-religious. He's going to say, they don't treat me nicely, and it's going to cause him to go further. Rosh Shlomo Zalman felt that lifnei iver lo sitin michshel means you have to look at the overall big picture of the religious level of your friend. Generally, causing them to stumble is not good for them. But sometimes, one small stumble is good in the big picture. And Rav Nevinsol felt that Rav Shlomo Zalman would even be lenient, especially on Pesach, because on Pesach, they come to you, right? They drive. That's a 10-minute drive, right? Let's say it's a 10-minute of averus. If they don't come to you, they're probably going to be watching TV, doing other things anyway, and they'll be eating chametz. At least now there's a chance they'll eat matzah on Pesach. So according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, there's definitely room to be lenient. It is better always to invite them before Pesach and offer them a place to stay. That is definitely better. But I just want to add one thing, why Pesach is even better than Shabbos. There is a shita of Rav Shechter, in one of these Ask the Rabbi things, he mentioned the sheet of Rav Avadya Yosef. The Rav Avadya Yosef held that driving on Yom Tov is only rabbinically forbidden. Driving on Shabbos is Asa Deraisa because you're making a fire. Driving on Yom Tov, Rav Avadya held, is only Asa Derabanan. So what you're asking them to do is at most an Issa Derabanan. So it's already much lighter. And therefore, there's definitely room to be lenient on Pesach specifically. If you could protect them from eating chametz while they come to your house, it's definitely something worthwhile. Now, there is one thing, though, that a lot of people are confused about. Inviting goyim, this I did mention, but I think this is a bit misconception. People think that it's there's a problem to invite a goy for the Seder. That's not really true. It's a problem to invite a goy for Yom Tov. It's a counterintuitive thing. It is better to invite a goy to Shabbos than to Yom Tov. Why? There's an Isser Derabanan of inviting a goy for the Yom Tov meal. Why would that be? So the reason is like this. On Shabbos, you can't cook anyway. So all your guests that are coming, they're eating whatever is prepared. There's nothing that's going to happen. On Yom Tov, though, you can cook. It is Osir Da'iraisa. It is biblically forbidden to cook for a non-Jew on Yom Tov. When the Pasuk says, I forget the exact lashon of the pasuk. Lachem means you're only allowed to cook for yourself. You're not allowed to cook for them. Meaning, cooking for a guy is biblically forbidden. Therefore, Chazal forbade inviting a non-Jew to a Yom Tov meal because we're afraid Shema Yarbe Bishviloi. He comes and he says, "Oh, I love eggs." You say, "Oh, I'm gonna make eggs for you." And that's going to lead you to do a biblical prohibition of cooking for them. Therefore, Chazal did not allow you to invite a non-Jew to Yom Tov. So in a way, it's better to invite them for Shabbos, no problem. Yom Tov is an issue. Within Yom Tov, there's no difference between Pesach and Sukkot and Shavuos. In people's minds, it's like they can't come to the Seder because the Seder is about Jewish people. It's nothing to do with the Seder. They can't come to any Yom Tov meal. Now, if they came, you don't have to ask them to leave. And if they were already invited and they already did the Avera, but you're not supposed to invite a non-Jew to a Yom Tov meal, and it's no difference between Pesach and Sukkot and Shavuos. It's all the same. On the contrary, if it's like a three-day Yom Tov, like Shabbos Chol Moed is perfect. There's no prohibition because the issue is Yom Tov over Shabbos. Now, let's say, this is an interesting Shaila, they asked for Moshe Feinstein, let's say you have a situation where a non-Jew is coming to your Seder. Now, how that could be, it could be either their spouse, and they're not invited, you're not inviting them, they're just coming, you know? Yeah, the case actually was, I believe the person's aunt was married to a non-Jew. So the Bacher asked for Moshe, there's an Isser, a very interesting Isser, you're not allowed to teach a non-Jew Torah. So at the Seder, you're going to be saying Haggadah, you're going to be saying Divrei Torah. Is it a problem to say Divrei Torah in front of a non-Jew, because you're not supposed to teach a non-Jew Torah? Now, the reason why you're not supposed to teach a non-Jew Torah is because the Gemara says, Torah tzivalonu, mayrosha kilos Yaakov, al tikri mayrosha ela ma'irasa. Mayrosha means it's our inheritance, but it could be read as ma'irasa, it's our wife. The Torah is our wife, and allowing a non-Jew to come close to the Torah is like allowing a non-Jew to become intimate with your wife. It's definitely, it's not allowed. And therefore, you're not allowed to teach a non-Jew Torah. Now, Bechlal, there's always a shaila. Is this biblical Torah, Torah Shebiksav, Torah Shebalpeh? The famous shaila is that everyone asks is, what if they're in the process of converting? So, okay, it's a machloikas, the marshal's lenient if they're in the process of conversion. Rav Kiveger holds that it's still also, fine, it's not for now. But over here you have a non-Jew. Is it a problem? So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in a tshuva, this is in Igros Moshe Yerodei Chelik Gimel Simin Sadi, I'm sorry, Chelik Beis, Simin Kuf Lamed Beis. He says, "Bedaver Chag HaPesach, Kishetovi Abaisim in a yeshiva." That this Pesach, you're going to come home from yeshiva. V'timse Shem Gamis Kroivecho V'ishtoi Shinochris. That your relative and his wife, who's not Jewish, are going to be at the Seder. V'atet Starich L'Hagadis Hagadah. But you have to say the Hagadah. You're going to say Divrei Torah. And he says, you have to translate also because his parents weren't religious. He wanted his parents to understand. Mele tishma gamien. This woman who's not Jewish is going to hear. Emot lefanecha. That's the truth. Rav Moshe says, poshel in yazdaiti, the masha amar of ami in moisin de v'ter la'akum. Rav Moshe says, the isser of teaching Torah to a goy is that teaching. Hudavka kishinecha v'nosel la'moisin la'akum. It's only a problem when your intention is to teach a goy. But if your intention is to teach Jews and there happens to be a goy there, that's not a problem. Now, by the way, this could happen, not just at the Seder. You're giving a shir, especially like, you know, you go out of town Chabad also. I was in once in San Diego, the Chabad house in San Diego, and a lovely rabbi there, and we were waiting to get a minyan. And it was a motley crew of 10 people, I'll give you that. But it was 10, we had 10 Jews. I said to the rabbi, I said, it was like 10:30 already in the morning. I said, what are you waiting for? He said, four of them are not Jewish. So we had to wait, you know. You have it out of town. So they come to a shir. Is it a problem? So says Rav Moshe, it's only a problem if your intention is to teach goyim. If your intention is to teach Jews, it's not a problem. What about lifnei iver? Meaning, what about the fact, so again, there's two isurim. There's teaching Torah to goyim, that's not a problem. What about lifnei iver? The goy is not allowed to learn Torah. By you teaching it, albeit without your intention to teach them, you're causing them to stumble. To that, Rav Moshe, in a separate shuva, this is in Chayel Gimel Simin Sadi, has a big yisoid, and that is, leka lifnei iver, the ein la'odim lihimane ma'asas avdavar ushushaloi b'shul shem yasa echad isoid de ma'asas. I think it's a big yisoid. And then Rav Moshe says, there's no lifnei iver if what you're doing is mutter and they're perverting it and they're causing themselves to stumble. If you want to do something, I'll give an example. You want to sell, you're selling cheese and you're a supermarket, Wasserman's is selling cheese and you're selling meat. Is it possible someone's going to buy it and cook it together? Olif neiver. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm doing something permitted. You want to make an isser? That's your problem. So Ramesha says, you're at your Seder. You're saying Magid at your Seder. That's 100% permitted. That person wants to come who's not Jewish and wants to listen. That's not my problem. If I'm giving a shir to Goyim, fine. But I'm doing something. It's been, let's say, a Shabbos day. Let's say someone who's not Jewish comes in here, which we've had in the past. Okay, is a problem. Kenny comes every Friday. Is my problem? It's not my problem. I'm not doing anything. I'm doing what's permitted. And it's a big yisayid b'chalal of lifnei iver that if what you're doing is mutter, if they want to cause themselves to stumble on your mutter actions, that's on them. That's not on you. And it has many ramifications throughout halacha. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's bechlal not an issue. No, you're if at the table, if you say, okay, you have non-Jews at your table and you want to say a Dvar Torah. If you want to say it for the Goyim, meaning if your kids are sleeping and your wife's in the kitchen and there's only non-Jews here, yeah, you shouldn't say a Dvar Torah. But if you want to say a Dvar Torah to your family and they happen to be listening, that's not your problem.
And it doesn't matter if you invited them or they invited themselves.
Correct, it doesn't matter. For the Torah aspect, it doesn't matter. Now, two more Shilas. No, this is only for non-Jews. This is not for someone who's non-observant. This is non-Jews. True. So the case of Rav Moshe, where he wasn't that he was just saying Magid, is that he was translating it out loud for his parents. So for Magid, he didn't have to say it loud enough for anyone to hear. It was that he was, you know, explaining the whole thing. And for that, there were non-Jews there, so that was the question. Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Nah, yeah, I don't know. That, to me, that feels a little bit like a game. I don't know. Two more shilas, and then we'll stop. I think I mention this every Pesach night, and that is the night of the Seder, different tefillas have different minhagim. Nusach, Svard, Eidut Mizrach, and the Gro all say Hallel in Shul with a bracha. Nusach Ashkenaz does not. And it's an old shila, obviously, as you can imagine. So, a couple of halachas. So Shmuel Kamenetsky Shlita has a certain hakpada. He has a certain shita, and that is, his shita is that the inyan of saying Hallel in shul for Nusach Svard and Eidut Mizrach and the Gra was only instituted with a tzibur, with a minyan. That's his shita. Therefore, according to Shmuel, if someone who davens Nusach Svard does not go to shul at the night of the Seder, he should not say it at their home. If, let's say, a woman is not going to shul that night, she, according to Shmuel, does not say Hallel, because he feels that it was only instituted with a tzibur. Rav Avadya Yosef disagrees. Rav Avadya Yosef feels that, no, it's part of the nusach, and therefore, regardless of whether you go to shul or not, you should say it. A second relevant halacha for that is, let's say you're davening, you're a nusach svard guy, so you normally would say it, but you're davening in a young Israel where they don't say it. So according to Rav Shmuel, you don't say it because you're not with a tzibur that's saying it. According to Rav Avadya Yosef, you would say it. The third shaila is the opposite. What if you're a Nusach Ashkenaz guy? You're a Litvak, so you don't say it, but you're davening at Hashivenu, where we do say it. So what do you do? So Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the shaila. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, say it with the tzibur, because you shouldn't be poirish from the tzibur. How could you stay in the shul when everyone's saying halal and you don't participate? But he says, do it without Hashem's name. So don't say b'shem Hashem, meaning don't say the bracha before. Just say the tehillim part. That you should do. Rav Shmuel feels you should walk out. That's Rav Shmuel Shita. Rav Shmuel Shita says, he says, in a way that will not, in a discreet way, you should leave. So that's... No, Shmuel, this is for someone who's Nusach Ashkenaz, who doesn't say it at all, who only says it in the Haggadah. Yeah. Then obviously say it in the Haggadah. Well, we say it in the Haggadah too. Yeah, we say it twice. Correct. Oh, they do? Oh, interesting. Okay, fine. I'm at the Yoga though. And one last Shaila. And the last Shaila that I'll deal with today is, there's a minig, going back to the Rishonim, outside, I don't know about Sfaradim, I know that Kimat everyone does, except for Chabad, they wear a kittel at the Seder. Married men wear a kittel at the Seder. Sfaradim do not. Chabad's Chassidim also don't. The question is, should an Avel, in the year of Avelus, wear a kittel? So the Rishonim basically give two reasons. There's two reasons given for wearing a kittel. One, and they're polar opposites of each other. One reason is that it's supposed to make you feel pristine and pure like a malach, and it's supposed to give you simcha. Holy and, like it connotates holiness and happiness. That's one reason. The other reason is the exact opposite, which is that the night of the Seder, everyone's leading, and everyone can, you can become like a balgaiva. You should remember shrouds, tachrichim, which is meant to humble you. So it's two opposite viewpoints amongst the Rishonim. So the question is, should an Avel wear a kittel? So the Taz, this is going back into the 1600s, the Taz talks about this, and he feels that the main reason of wearing a kittel, in his viewpoint, is the tachrichim. The main reason is the tachrichim, and therefore, he feels, yeah, why not? An Avel, according to the Taz, an Avel should, because what's the problem? If anything that would connect to tachrichim, it's an Avel. That's the Taz's viewpoint. The Magen Avraham completely disagrees. The Magen Avraham says, so the Taz says you should. The Magen Avraham says, I completely disagree. The Magen Avraham feels that an Avel should not wear regardless of the reason. Because he says, if the reason is for simcha and pristine and angelic holiness and happiness, doesn't really apply to an Avel. And he says, if the reason is to remind you of the day of death, to humble you, an Avel unfortunately doesn't need reminding. And therefore, the Magen Avraham feels that an Avel does not wear it, because regardless of the reason, he doesn't wear it. Mishnah Berurah follows that, and Rav David Feinstein in his Haggadah, Rav David Feinstein has a wonderful Haggadah, it's called the Kol Dodi Haggadah, it's really good, it's a purely halachic Haggadah, it's really, really good. And Rav David Feinstein writes that, I think his Lashon is, that the Magen Avraham's view is very compelling, is the most compelling, and therefore he feels that an Avel does not wear a kittel, so the Taz and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach says to wear. The Magen Avraham, Mishnah Berurah, and more modern Rav David Feinstein says not to. Practical halacha, Rav David Feinstein advises that you do not wear one unless if the person really, really wants to, he says he has what to rely on, obviously. This is customary. And you got the Taz and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, those are very big guns. But he feels that you shouldn't, unless you have a personal minig. Listen, if you have a personal minig, it's a personal minig. But that would be the halacha from the Magen Avraham and the Taz. Shana Rishayna, they don't really address the reasons, but amongst the Poiskim, there are different viewpoints. Some do, some don't. But the Svarim that address it, I've quoted them in the Sefer on weddings, it's more minhag of Hasidim, like Netta Gavriel. They don't really address it. I think if you wanted to put it together, you could think about if the reason is to remind you of death doesn't really apply to a chasam, then he shouldn't wear it. If it has to do with simcha, then it would be appropriate. It's different minhagim, and if you look in the Netta Gavriel on Hilchas Pesach and Hilchas Nesuin, he brings down a whole list of different chasidim, and you follow your personal minhag. I'm not 100% sure what the reason for it is. It's in the Sefer Minhagim that they don't wear it. I don't think they wear it even on Rosh Hashanah either, or even Yom Kippur. I'm not sure about Yom Kippur, I have to check, but they just say it's in the Sefer Minhagim not to. I'm not aware of a specific reason why Chabad doesn't.